Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Audrey Martin, reporter at Home Healthcare News. Today's episode is with Seth Sternberg, CEO and co-founder of Honor. In this conversation, Sternberg talks about immigration policies in the U.S. and how they are affecting caregivers and providers. He also talks about how Honor is working to maintain stability for caregivers and the clients they serve. Now let's get into it. Hello. For our listeners who aren't familiar with Honor, can you provide an overview of the company?
Yeah. So there were four co-founders. We started Honor 10 years ago. The goal was to change the way society cares for older adults. And we wanted to do that first by going into home care and really trying to make the space of home care better for both clients and their, you know, family members who are taking care of them, but also very much for the care providers. We call them care pros. So we early on actually interviewed a whole bunch of them before we started the company, and we started to coin the term care for the care pro. And then along the way, we built a pretty large home care agency ourselves. Then we started a program where we took our technology. We built a lot of technology, really rooted in AI, because there were lots of things in home care that were confusing to us. It was kind of like, you know, why does this client like that person and a different client like a different person? Turns out AI is really good at figuring that kind of stuff out. You know, why does this caregiver like this job and not like that job? So we built an AI platform about 10 years ago, and then we gave that AI platform to third-party agencies, and then we ultimately acquired the Homestead Network, and with the goal of, you know, taking our AI systems and being able to give it to the Homestead Network to really enable that network to thrive and serve more older adults and help their kids and help the care pros. So that's a story in a nutshell. We're the largest senior care provider kind of network going to people's homes, probably in the world, definitely in the Western Hemisphere. In U.S., we occupy kind of the top spot. Same thing in the United Kingdom and in Canada. We also have a very large operation in Germany. And that's kind of the state of the company.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. So what we're talking about today is, you know, the Trump administration's immigration policies that are happening in the U.S. right now. So with immigrants making up 28% of the direct care workforce for long-term care services, how do you see their role evolving in the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, so from the beginning when we started Honor, we were learning, you know, who is this workforce? And, you know, based on who is this workforce, what do they actually want? And then, like I said, how do you care for the care pros? And you have to remember, the ultimate goal of care for the care pros is that you can provide better care to older adults. And one of the things that we learned real early was a large portion of the workforce, irrespective of what geography you're talking about, you know, if it's California or Illinois or Tennessee, is people who are immigrants. Either they're, you know, immigrants not yet citizens, or they've become naturalized citizens. And that matters, A, for how you think about, you know, finding that workforce, helping that workforce, training that workforce. And it matters because you quickly discover when you start building in home care that there's simply a labor shortage. Like, there's simply not enough people, full stop, forget about where someone comes from, right? Like, if you just say, like, look, I need to serve lots and lots of older adults in Boston, or I need to serve lots and lots of older adults in, you know, Omaha, you know, in Kansas City. Well, it turns out that in all cases, you will be short. You're like, you won't say, I can't find people to care for. You will say, I can't find enough people to care for the people. And that is true irrespective of where we have historically been on immigration. Like, we have not had enough Americans. We've actually not had enough immigrants either. And so this is, you know, a challenge that the entire industry faces. And, you know, the article that you just wrote pointed to it, right? Like, the advocacy groups in the space have been very clear that there is a real shortage of skilled professionals to care for older adults. And we need to be extraordinarily careful that we don't do things that take away from that labor force.
Sure. Right. Yeah. So in what ways do you believe changes in immigration laws might influence the accessibility of caregiving services for older adults? I mean, you kind of touched on that already, but...
Yeah. So I'm going to make like a kind of equal opportunity statement here. And that would be no political party since I have been running Honor has done immigration right from a elder care perspective. No one. It's not Trump. It's not Obama. It's actually everybody who's kind of done it wrong. And the challenge there is there are a bunch of forces within the United States that really think about their particular industry, their particular situation, right? Like, you know, I run a farm or I'm worried about workers getting these kinds of jobs or whatever it might be. And I think everybody is well-intentioned. But it turns out that we have literally the largest population growing extraordinarily fast in the United States. So by 2034, there will be more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 18 in the United States. So a bigger population than kids. And it turns out that we simply do not have enough people to care for that population. And we're a little behind Northern Europe and East Asia on kind of that, you know, change in demographics where you literally have more older people than younger people. And so it shows in our policies because those countries, even, you know, a Japan, right? They have built immigration policies that allow for people to come in legally, certified, right? From, you know, countries that, you know, have labor to export into their countries that desperately need that labor because they have a demographic imbalance problem. We haven't done that yet, right? We have been doing the part of the program in the United States, which has been, hey, we don't want these certain, you know, groups of immigrants. And that's a big problem if we really need those people to care for very large swaths of our society. So we have to find a way to bring people in from other countries who are going to help our older adults. We simply do not have the labor resident within our country today, be it, you know, people who are born here, people who are naturalized citizens, people who are immigrated here. We don't have enough people.
And that's been going on for a long time, as you mentioned.
Yeah, this has just been, you know, we started on our 10 years ago. And for 10 years, there has been a shortage. And the reality is, all of the administrations that I have seen during my time doing this haven't taken proactive steps to help increase the workforce. And, you know, we're trying to do our part. Like, we try to train people and we try to find amazing people and we try to create AI systems that give people who work in home care better, more attractive jobs. Like, we're trying to make it a very attractive job so that, you know, anyone would say, I want to do that job. But we have failed to get enough people. And so we need to figure out the societal systems to bring more people in.
Right. So on that line, you know, given that caregiving is an $85 billion industry, what economic effects do you anticipate from these continuing labor shortages related to immigration restrictions?
Yeah, I mean, so what is challenging is you've got this thing called the sandwich generation. The sandwich generation is the kind of, typically it's thought of as the sons and daughters who are kind of 40 to 60 years old, and they're caring for both their parents and their kids. And those people are squeezed, right? Their lives are difficult. They have needs above, they have needs below, and oh, by the way, they have to somehow earn money. And so very frequently, one of those people has to drop out of the labor force in order to then be able to help their mom and their kids. And that actually moves our economy backward, right? Because now you're taking a tight system and you're making it tighter because you're doing a thing that actually removes more labor from the system than you expected. So, you know, if we don't solve this problem, people will still care for their mom. They will still care for their kids. And if that means they're going to have to drop out of the labor force, they will. But that's not good for them. It's not good for the labor force. It's not good for the economy. So this is like a case where like we have to figure out how to bring enough people to this industry. Immigration has to be one of the solutions because, like I've said multiple times, there's simply not enough Americans who are, you know, applying, and there are not enough immigrants who are applying either, honestly. And this is imperative to actually continue to help grow our economy because we don't want people to drop out of the workforce to care for their, you know, their moms and their kids. We want people to be productive in the workforce and have them do kind of high value jobs and then bring other people in who want to do these jobs that those people love and are really good at. And that's how everybody kind of wins.
Let's move to quality a little bit. How might shifts in this immigrant workforce impact the quality of care provided to elderly Americans? You know, I mean, there are not enough people to take care of everyone. That's one part of quality of care. But what about when we lose some of these immigrants from the workforce?
Yeah. So here's the thing. You have to, as I understand what the kind of stated goal of the Trump administration, at least, was at the outset. It was look like there are a number of immigrants who are here who have committed crimes who we may not want in the country. And those people, I hope, are not in home care caring for older adults, especially given that, you know, any good actor in this system is doing deep background checks. They're all going through E-Verify. They're filing I-9s. Like, only, you know, people who are authorized to work, who can pass a background check, who can pass a drug test, those are the people who are caring for the elderly. And if you accidentally make a move that takes immigrants out of the system who are productive, right, who have been contributing, who have not committed crimes, who are not, you know, not in that group of, hey, do we really want them here? But they're truly helping. You have to say, okay, well, you might have someone like this CHN, I think the program's called CHNV. And we got a notice from DHS that they're canceling the visas of people who came in on this CHNV program, I think is basically what it said. And so they said, hey, you have to re-verify that the people who are working for you are still allowed to work for you. And it's like, okay, we will do that. But here's the thing. Those people have been productive home care workers who have established, let's say, like a 1-3 year relationship with an older adult who might have dementia. And to pull that person who is a productive member of our society now away from that older adult, especially if they have dementia, is like deeply, deeply counterproductive. Because that person with dementia actually really benefits from stability. Right? So these systems are very large and very complex, but they're very nuanced. And to do it right, like, you know, in startups, there's this kind of move fast and break things mentality. In home care, even us as a, you know, home care startup, senior care startup, we had to adjust, move fast and break things, right? We couldn't do that the way that a lot of tech companies will tend to do because you're breaking people's lives. And that's dangerous. And in something like, you know, immigration policy, same deal. Like, you got to do it with nuance because you can accidentally break people's lives that you really don't want to break. And it's not just the lives of the immigrants. It's the lives of the Americans who they're working with and for, too. You're breaking everybody's lives. And so this nuance thing really matters to maintain quality.
So if you had an audience with the policymakers and they said, you know, hey, Seth, what policy changes would you recommend to ensure a stable and adequate workforce in the healthcare industry?
I mean, I think given what I understand of the priorities of the current administration, and I'm not close to it, but given what I understand, I would hope that there's an immigration system that has kind of a few qualities that would work for them and work for the industry. I think it would be one part, you know, we will open to people who want to immigrate to the United States for a period of time, who want to work in home care. So it's like, hey, we'll give you a visa. It's a fast track visa. So as long as you pass a background check, as long as you've gone to school, as long as I'd say work history in caregiving, great. Like, let's have those requirements. But if you have those requirements, it's like, okay, great. You get a fast tracked visa. It's really important that it's fast tracked instead of like a 2-year application process. That doesn't really help given where we are. The second part is it's fine to say, look, they should come from countries that are fundamentally stable, because as I understand it, a fear of the current administration is, well, someone comes here and then they say, well, I want to apply for asylum immediately. It's like, okay, fine. If that's a priority, then restrict, you know, where people are coming in from countries that, you know, are stable. That's totally cool. Like, lots of people from the Philippines, lots of people from Malaysia, right? Lots of people from many countries would want to come here, and they'd want to work here for a period of time. And we could be comfortable in that it's, you know, not to come and just, you know, claim asylum, which I think is a thing that's a concern of the current administration. And then, you know, the final thing I would say is it is okay to make it not a path to citizenship. I think that's okay too. Because I think that the person who comes from, you know, let's just keep using the Philippines, because that is a country that sends a lot of caregivers around the world to lots and lots of countries around the world. You know, if someone says, hey, I want to spend 5 or 10 years in the United States, I want to earn United States wages in this profession that the United States desperately needs, that will be beneficial to me and my family. It will give me a great life experience. And then my plan would be to ultimately go back to, you know, my country or another country. I think that's okay too. But I think that those, you know, if I'm trying to like find the intersection, right, of what I understand, you know, if you put me in front of the Trump administration, like, hey, what would I say to them? I would say, I think I understand some of your priorities. I think I also understand some of the priorities that we need as a society to care for older adults. Let's find something that works for those two priorities. I think it's basically an immigration system that has, at least for this industry, those three qualities. I think it's, you know, people who we can fast track because they have the right background. I think it's people from countries that we deem to be, you know, kind of stable countries, however they would define that. I'm not an expert, but like someone who is going to come here and, you know, not going to say, hey, I want to immediately claim asylum. And I think it would be, you know, you're here for 5 or 10 years. It's a defined period of time, but this particular visa is not a path to citizenship. I think everybody in that system would actually be better off today than where we are right now, which is honestly rather destructive.
Right. Cultural competence. How important do you think that is in the caregiving workforce, particularly as it pertains to immigrant workers serving these diverse populations?
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways to look at cultural competence. And I think you can just broaden it out more to like how well is someone trained. There's one part, which is we live in a reality that you can be in one part of America and everybody there was like basically born in America. And, you know, everybody there kind of looks pretty similar. And then you can be in another part of America and you're walking down the street and, you know, every skin color and shade and, you know, accent is all different. And there's wild, you know, kind of like diversity of backgrounds. And that is the reality of our country. We have both. And that means that you want to be able to help all of those types of people in our country. No one group is better or worse than the other, right? And they all, especially as they have aging parents, all of their aging parents need help. And, you know, you will find that there are aging parents where you desperately want to find a caregiver who speaks Mandarin, right? A caregiver who speaks Tagalog, right? Because some people's parents simply will not, you know, be able to understand a caregiver who speaks English. And it is simply better if you do have a caregiver on staff who speaks their native language who can do that. At the same time, lots and lots and lots of people who are immigrants to this country who work in caregiving successfully serve people who were born in America, only speak English, et cetera, because they also speak English, right? They speak English, they've been trained, they have a care plan. Like it is a professionalized service where that person, that's the reason we call them care pros, right? Is that person has been trained to work with older adults, irrespective of what their, you know, background is. And if they're in America and they're speaking English, and then that person who came in from the Philippines, where by the way, they speak English is dominant language there, then that works too. So it really does depend on the nuance. Like you're asking a question that sounds broad, but it's actually a very nuanced answer. And the nuanced answer is sometimes you really do want that kind of specialist care pro because you have a customer who only speaks Spanish. And other times, you know, that care pro who came from Mexico can be a great care pro for someone who, you know, was born and raised in the United States and only speaks English.
How do you perceive the public's understanding of the role of immigrant workers in the healthcare system? And do you think that can be improved?
Yeah. You know, this is honestly, this is a tough one. And there is a reality, if I were to get like, you know, marginally political science-y for a second, we have a representative democracy for a reason. Like that is literally the kind of democracy that we live in. We don't live theoretically in a popular democracy. We live in a representative democracy where we elect someone to represent us and they are kind of supposed to listen to all the stakeholders and they are supposed to then create policy that is kind of the most beneficial for as many stakeholders as possible. And in an idealized world, therefore, not everyone has to be an expert in everything. Like that is actually the point of a representative democracy, is that you're not requiring the broad populace to be an expert in everything because the broad populace cannot be an expert in everything. And I think something, you know, to the credit, for example, of the Trump administration that I've seen, is that they are bringing in a bunch of people from a number of industries and saying, hey, we want to learn from you. In fact, a number of people who I know from the tech industry and kind of health tech industry were at the White House, I think, yesterday. And they're learning from each other. And that is good, right? So we need people representing us, like the people, who will really think about what is the best for the future of the majority. And I don't know that we can rely on the populace to understand every policy nuance. And I think that if you are a elected representative of the people right now, you've got to recognize the older adult population is exploding. You've got to recognize there will be more older adults than younger adults. You've got to recognize we simply do not have enough labor in America, you know, American-born, immigrant naturalized, immigrant non-nat, we don't have enough labor. And so it is a problem that has to be solved at the policy level because, hey, everyone else before you hasn't done it. So you have an opportunity to fix a big problem. So let's take that opportunity and fix that big problem.
And win some great kudos by doing it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like a huge opportunity for someone to actually fix it. And, you know, like I said, it has not been done yet. I've been doing this for 10 years and the reality is it hasn't been done for the last 20 years either. Yeah. So it's an opportunity to make a mark.
Yeah. So let's talk honor. What's honor doing today to address the care gap?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that we focus on, is, like I said, care for the care pro around the care gap. And here's the story, the easiest instantiation of how I could explain this. Actually, two stories. I know we're on a podcast and I hope I don't bore people who are listening, but one story is so often home care owners come to me and they say, I just can't find anyone to care for my prospective clients. I have to turn clients away all the time. And I say to them, well, well, what percentage of the market do you have in your local market? And the answer is usually less than 10% because it's a very fragmented industry. And I'm like, okay, so if that's true, let's say you have 10%, then for every 10 caregivers who you employ, other people are employing 90. So they exist. You do not have a competitive job that is attracting them from your competitors. And so that's thing one that we focus on, frankly, is create a better job, right? Care for the Care Pro means create a better job for what Care Pros really want and deliver them more of that so that we can then, A, have more people that can serve our prospective clients, and then B, put them in a better place so that they will serve those prospective clients better. And that is kind of the number one thing I would say that we are doing is we are trying to create a really attractive job. And what that also does, by the way, is it can increase the number of people who decide to come into the profession. Because if you take a profession that has not been thought of as a profession, but rather just like kind of a job with no path, but you turn it into your profession with a path, you can potentially convince some people who might lose their jobs because like AI, for example, like I don't know about you, but the last time I walked into a McDonald's, I ordered on a machine. I didn't talk to a human. And so there are jobs that are being taken away right now by AI. But we can possibly convince some of those people to decide to go into this profession if we create a good enough job. And I think that that's, you know, the one other thing that I would say that we're doing, and this is important, it's in the same vein. Like, we don't just go around saying, hey, the way to create the best job is, you know, this one thing, like, you know, hourly rate. When you look, for example, at hourly rate, which most people knee-jerk to, I was just talking to some entrepreneurs and they were like, man, the home care industry is so messed up because it just doesn't pay people enough. And they're thinking hourly rate. And it's like, you know, hourly rate's one variable, but the more important variable actually is what is take-home pay. And so now we're doing rate times hours, right? And then we're not trying to subtract out other costs like driving across bridges with tolls to get to work, right? Because that would go to take-home pay too. We have to think about both the kind of rate times hour, but we have to think about the expense thing too. So you're focusing on one variable and you're kind of saying, hey, I think I'm smart and I think I know. How many care pros have you actually interviewed and sat down with and asked, what do you really care about? How much data science have you actually done on what care pros want? Do you statistically know what they want, or are you just spitballing because you think you're smart? And most people are spitballing because they think they're smart. And that is not helpful, honestly. Like, what's helpful is like talking to care pros, understanding things from their perspective, and then watching the broad population and behaviors to understand what people really are motivated by and what people actually really care about. And another, you know, so another example, and you can tell I kind of am passionate about this one. Like, there's this other thing, which is like, okay, what's your rate times hours minus costs? How about stability? How about like, hey, next week, oops, one of my clients moved into a facility. Sorry, Janet, I don't have work for you anymore. You just took a 50% pay cut because I don't have work for you. That's like devastating for a care pro. And so stability of the take-home pay matters a lot. And people just don't think about this stuff when they're contemplating how do I compete for care pros. But I think if they did, you would end up creating just a better, more attractive profession that got more people attracted to it.
I would agree. And I think it extends beyond care pros, right? I mean, that's kind of seems like a key to retention. It seems like a key to attraction.
I mean, I can tell you definitively, like we've actually done the statistical test. If you do an dollars per hour increase without fixing the other things, you will have no better retention at all than your current retention. It will be a wild fail. If you figure out all the things the care pros actually care about that go way beyond the simplistic dollars per hour thing, your retention will dramatically improve. So you're 100% right.
So, okay, so let's dig a little deeper into that. You are very passionate about this, and I love it. It's transforming great into podcast fodder. So tell me a little bit more about what honor does to make caregiving a more sustainable career. You know, like how transforming the caregiver job itself. Dive a little deeper into that, if you will.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff in there, but the thing that I would actually say that we do is the most important, and I can't overemphasize this enough, is that we know we don't know. Right. So instead of coming at it from a, hey, I know what you want, caregiver, care pro. Instead, you build an entire ecosystem that basically listens to data and then processes that data against kind of an outcome you're looking for. So let's do churn of care pros, right? How often do they leave your system? And if you do that, you can figure out, oh, okay, like here are the five things that care pros actually really care about. And then you can build your system to deliver them as much of those five things as you possibly can. And it's not because you intuited it yourself. It's not because you thought you knew the answer. It's not even from directly interviewing those care pros, because you know what one care pro wants might be very different from what another care pro wants. But if you can look at 10,000 or 100,000 care pros, and you can search for patterns on what is it that we were able to give you in the past, what is that set of things that then yielded like, oh, wow, you stayed longer than everybody else. That is the most important thing we do. So any one thing like stability and pay I talked about, we absolutely seek stability and pay. Another one, care pros hate being put into a home that does not have the needs that they're able to fulfill because they feel like they're not performing, right? They feel bad because like they're in a home where they're going to fail. They don't want to fail. They want to succeed. So, you know, then what is that, right? That's another set of kind of data science. Like what is the, where will you succeed based on what your skills are and what those needs are? So this, the onion gets like real big, real fast if you're like thinking peel the onion layers. But the most important thing we do is that we know that we don't know. And rather what we know how to do is build systems that listen to data and process the data so that we can at scale with a ton and ton of data points, get to what do the people actually want. And then you can provide, believe it or not, like a massively more human personalized system for those employees. That is the way we approach things.
Fantastic. So let's end on technology. And what role does technology play in expanding access to care? And how does that fit into Honor's broader mission?
Yeah, this is another one I care a lot about. It drives me nuts that basically Medicaid provides home care, or you're wealthy, or you happened to have bought long-term care insurance or are a veteran and get some VA benefits. There's this statistic that $800 billion a year in economic value flows from kind of kids and neighbors to older adults for older adult issues. $800 billion a year. It dwarfs Medicaid. It dwarfs private pay home care. It is massive. And all of those people are basically unserved by like the industry today. And that drives me crazy. And I think that the only way that we will possibly solve that problem, right? And remember that when I started Honor, that $800 billion was $400 billion. That was the old statistic. Now the statistic is $800 billion. It's going to be much larger in another 5 years, right? Because of the rapid expansion of the aging population. The only way that we are going to solve the, we don't have enough facilities and no one wants to be there anyway, frankly, and population is exploding, is we will figure out how to care for people in their homes in a cheaper, more efficient way that is going to be a mix of human and machine. It's like literally the only way to do it. And that requires like a deep, 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 deep technical ability to integrate kind of the device world and the machine world with the human world. It also requires a massive human network, right? With depth that covers the country. Turns out we have that, right? So this is probably the thing I'm most excited about as a problem to go solve, because I hate it when you've got large swaths of the population who that have literally no choice. They have nothing today that can help them. We have to fix that. And we will. And technology is going to be the thing that does it, frankly. Like we'll build that technology, but there isn't just a human self, right? And there's only that kind of human device fusion to solve that massive problem for the biggest chunk of our society.
Thank you for your valuable insights. I mean, this has been a fantastic conversation. I very much appreciate you joining me on this call.
Thanks for having me, Audrey. I hope I didn't offend too many people, but it was fun to chat.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com or consider becoming an HHCN Plus member. I'm Audrey Martin, and this has been a production of WTWH Media.